Hello? Oh, yeah, there we are. Hey, everybody. this is Dave Weiner and Morning Coffee Notes. This is your monthly morning Coffee Notes installment. We try to do one every month, whether we need to or not. This is the end of April, and the last one we did was at the beginning of March. So, we're going to start off with a little bit of music here. Let's see if we can actually get this up so that you can hear it. Yeah, it's like a heartbeat, but don't worry, it becomes music. You'll see. Come on, let's go. Here we go. Okay, it's like a beat. Here we go. The line about really, really kicks him in the, they say the heart of rock and roll. It's, you even listen to the news, is, and it's not pod safe music, whatever. I was listening to that last night on my daily walk or history evening. God, the sun, of course, sets so late this time of year that you can be walking in practically the middle of the night and you just, like, it's daylight outside, so it's great. And it's just such a, Huey Lewis is a East Bay guy, and of course, I'm living in the East Bay, so it makes sense to listen to Huey Lewis. I used to ski to Huey Lewis. In the late 80s and early 90s, I did a lot of skiing and got into really good shape, and And I don't know, I spent like 30 days skiing for like 3 years straight each year. And you know, I tried out lots of music on my Walkman. This is long before there were iPods, of course. The best music was Huey Lewis. Aretha wasn't bad. The B-52s was pretty good. Cosmic Thing and Rock Lobster and Love Shack, stuff like that. But Huey Lewis just had the right skiing beat. I mean, you know, it's like up, down, up, down, up, down. Up. And it puts a, maybe not for everybody, but he puts a big, big smile on my face. And, of course, that's good skiing and smiling is, like, it's kind of why you do the skiing thing. So, anyway, here I am doing a podcast. I got a little list of things that I want to talk about today. As often is the case, my podcasting is inspired by Steve Gilmore's podcasting, and today is no exception. They had a short podcast, Gilmore Gang, on, and now they have advertising at the beginning of the Gilmore Gang. He talks, first he plays a little thing, an Earthlink ad, which I can't get it out of my head the way the Better Bad News guys sort of trash them. They talk to you like a kindergarten teacher talks to his or her students about the internet, and it's your friend, and it's not your enemy, because that's the way you want it to be. And I go, you know, it's like, excuse me, I don't know that. I kind of don't want the internet, which is basically a bunch of wires, to be my friend. If that's my friend, I, you know, well, not my friend. Anyway, you know, let me make a note here. I want to talk about something else. I keep thinking of these things. This may be a long podcast, huh? Maybe not. Anyway, so he had on some of my most favorite people. In fact, what was really funny was it was Monday, a week ago this last Monday. So you figure it out. It was like April 17th, I think it was. It might have been the 18th. I was in New York City, and I was staying at the Millennium Hilton Hotel at a really nice room. I've got like a bazillion points at Hilton, so I got their $149 special, but it got upgraded to an upper floor corner room with a view of the East River and a view of the Empire State Building. Unfortunately, no view of the of Ground Zero. I was kind of hoping to be able to see that from the room, but couldn't do that. And I had a meeting first thing in the morning at, I guess, about 10 o'clock with Jeff Jarvis. And I got a look at his super stealth news startup thing that all we know about publicly and officially is that Craig Newmark is one of the investors in this. And we talked a bit about all kinds of stuff. And Jeff Jarvis and I approached this world from completely different directions, almost 180 degrees, you know, apart. He comes from the news or entertainment business, having been a TV guide of all places earlier in his career, and of course I came from Silicon Valley and the tech industry. And but for the difference of perspective that we have, we see things almost entirely eye to eye. It's not quite 100% agreement because he still wants to meter MP3s. He wants, and I suppose I don't mind the idea of metering it. It's just that it's pretty hopeless at this point. The genie's kind of out of the bottle. In order to be able to monitor it, you would have to come up with a format that could only be played by software that did do the monitoring and reported back to the home ship. But that's exactly the kind of software that people are being conditioned heavily against, which is spyware. And it's right that they be conditioned against it. We need, because Because spyware, while the kind of spyware that Jeff talks about is pretty benign, and well, very benign, in fact, by definition, because Jeff's a benign guy, I mean, and so he wouldn't advocate something that was sort of nasty, but it's the rare exception, because almost all of the other stuff that does what he talks about is very, very nasty stuff. And so how do you teach people who don't know a whole lot about computers and don't want to learn a whole lot about computers, because we're told over and over and over again that they don't want to learn. So how do you teach them the difference between this good kind of spyware and the bad kind that reports back all your keystrokes or your passwords and your social security number and all the rest of the stuff that's eventually going to lead to a what I think of as a Katrina-like meltdown of our economic system? I think that day is coming, and not being prepared for that in the, you know, I think that's a little bit more of a concern for me and than making the world safe for advertising. And I don't, you know, whatever. I mean, maybe it could be that the content, of course we hate that word, but the content that we're going to get in the future may be the kind of content that you can produce without being advertising sponsored, and maybe we're going to give up some of the great production values, or maybe we're not going to give up any production values because we're going to implement in software what used to have to be implemented by human beings. Both Jeff and I are roughly the same age, and so we're on the verge of becoming obsolete, if we're not already obsolete. I like to keep myself young by experiencing and sometimes even inventing new ways to communicate. So I like to think that I'm keeping relatively flexible. On the other hand, I don't see myself as ever becoming a World of Warcraft expert. I read the stuff that people write about it, getting to 60 points and then finding out that, oh my god, there's another 60 levels, that I can rise. And I go, geez, I'm not even going to get to the first level on this shit. So, you know, there are certainly already some things that I know are not for me, because I'm getting ready to phase out, you know, 20, 25 years at the max before, you know, I'm off to wherever it is I'm going, you know. So it could be that our way of looking at things is very anachronistic, sort of like I put this in something I wrote the other day. It would have been like asking how many miles per quart of oats does your new horseless carriage get? You go, well, it doesn't run on oats. So what are you going to say? Anyway, so where was I? Right, so I went to see Jeff Jarvis, and then right after that, immediately after that, I went to the Katz's Deli and met with Andrew Barron and Amanda Condon, both from Rocket Boom. And there's a little secret. They're equal partners. In fact, I think Andrew has 51% to Amanda's 49%. I think that's how they said it. I mean, Andrew was the founder, but Amanda and him are pretty much equal partners. And since Amanda is the stage presence, people, I think, tend to think that it's Amanda's show, and in every sense that we're aware of that it is, but they're both visionaries, and they both have big ideas, and they both are collaborating, they're working together, and they're producing something, of course, that we're all watching, and it's funny, and it's wonderful, and it's irreverent. I just watched the latest Thursday's Rocket Boom, and had that moment where I was really sorry that I had a mouthful of coffee because it was all I could do to keep it from exploding out of my mouth because I was, like, so entertained. Seriously. And they were very nice to me in the interview. I really appreciated it. You always go into these things wondering whether there's the knife behind the back. There are a lot of times, you know, technique that reporters use is they're very friendly and they're nice to you, and all the time they're just waiting for that soundbite to come out, and that's going to be the one that really they're going to hang you with, or you're just part of some story that they're putting together, and They just need a few sound bites from you to show how true what everybody else is saying about you is. Well, no, they pretty much, I mean, they are WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. And to the extent that we understand what church we belong to and what the philosophy of that church is, we belong to the same church. And I think we're beginning to figure it out. I have a thing here. Let's just get this up here. Where is it? Right. The church motto might be, the more you send them away, the more they come back. And if you go to Scripting News, I believe it's December 12th, 2005. Let me just make sure that that's exactly what we're talking about here. Yes, it is December 12th, 2005. You'll see a thing that says How to Make Money on the Internet Version 3. And I guess what I was saying, on the Gilmore Gang, the one that just came out, I believe it was the day before yesterday or yesterday, very recently, I listened to it yesterday. They were talking about my philosophy of advertising at the beginning because Amanda was on the show. I didn't even mention Amanda was on the show, Jeff Jarvis, of course, the regulars, Doc Searles, Mike Arrington, Steve Gilmore. I'm not sure who else was on this particular episode. And the question, sort of, Amanda said she believes in advertising, and nobody really said what my philosophy about it was, but I think they assumed that I don't believe in advertising. And I suppose you could say that I don't, but that doesn't mean that I don't believe in commercial information. And I think there's the world of difference. I don't think that really anybody on that show would disagree with what I'm about to say, because they're all smart people. Oh, Richard Edelman, who I don't know, so I can't vouch for, you know, his point of view. I'm not going to make any assumptions either way, but I don't really know the guy. He's a very famous PR guy, though, so very successful. But the difference is between the world we live in now and the world we used to live in, or the one that we're transitioning away from, is that the viewer was captive. We thought of them as couch potatoes, and they sat there and they watched the programming. They were programmed, and you threw a little bit of commercial information, I might add, unwanted commercial information, in the middle of the entertainment that they did want, and that was the way you made that, creating that entertainment profitable. So we became eyeballs, and we were captive, and that whole world developed. Well, if you look at the new media, you know, everything that's defined by the internet or by computers, you know, your TiVo and your, you know, all the PVRs and even your podcasting. The one thing that's common about it is that if you throw in some commercial information, i.e. advertising, in the middle of a program that somebody, you know, they're watching a program or listening to a podcast or whatever, and you throw in something, they don't have to listen to it. They can skip over it. There will be a way for them to do that. So, that's just a reality. And I think it's a good reality, actually. So it's a reality, and if you don't like it, well, sorry, but that is the way the world works now. And I think it's good, because what happens is people don't stop wanting commercial information. This is what advertisers, they've gotten lazy, because they can buy your attention from other people because they own that attention, or they did own that attention. They can buy pieces of that attention from those people and then force you effectively to watch something that you didn't want to watch. Well, it's a little bit more demanding on the commercial information provider to provide information that you would choose to watch, but it's much more powerful. So if I've already decided that I'm going to buy another MP3 player, which, like everybody who owns an MP3 player, we're going to buy another one. I mean, the whole market is premised on that understanding that we're not done buying these things yet, that we have not reached. I, I read Brent Simmons had a comment on, he's learning how to use the iPod now, and Brent is a critic of user interface, let's put it that way. And he says that it's not that the iPod is easy to use, because it's not, which is true, it's not. Its user interface is not easy. It's that it's fun to learn, says Brent. And I don't know. I didn't find it very much fun to learn. I have now learned it. I have learned how to use iTunes. But you have to learn how to set those defaults properly to get it to behave rationally so that you can charge it from two different computers. You know, let's say I'm generally tethered to my desktop computer. That's where all my content is, because why? Well, it's got a half a terabyte hard drive, and I'm about to buy a full terabyte for it. Another, so I'll have 1.5 terabytes. That's where my content lives, and so that's where, that's what I want to sync up with. But I don't travel with the desktop, you know, I travel with my laptop, and so when my iPod runs out of juice, I want to be able to plug it into the laptop and get it charged up. Okay, I can do that now, because I figured out what the right setting is for that. I also now know how to get content on there. I can sometimes get things, audiobooks, to play in the right order, but most of the time I can't. Still haven't figured that one out. There's a lot of crap in there, and it's not fun to learn. I like, in my humble opinion. Now, Brent's mileage may vary, of course, we all, you know, some people like to pierce body parts. They think that's fun too, or tattoo themselves, and I just don't get it. But well, more the merrier, or to each his own, probably would be a better way to put it. So, we're not done buying iPods. I guess that's where I was going with that. We're not done buying MP3 players. So, I am going to be a consumer of commercial information about MP3 players until I decide for sure that I'm not going to be buying any more MP3 players. So, I would happily subscribe to a feed that contained only information about MP3 players. I mean good information about MP3 players. I want to know what the features are. I don't mind if the presentation is stylized. I like stylized presentations. I like creative presentations. But first and foremost, I want to be told, I want to be respected, and I want to get accurate information. I'm going to be very upset if I buy a product and find out that it doesn't do what they told me that it does, or if it has a huge flaw that they didn't tell me about. I'm really going to switch to another channel to get my information from another source if it turns out that that's what they're doing. So I'm more demanding. I want more information. I want to make better choices. But I want to buy more stuff. But I want to buy the stuff that I want to buy. I don't want to buy the products that they're telling me about on the TV shows. I don't watch the TV shows. They're not even trying to make TV shows that I want to watch. I do watch a few. Unfortunately, they're canceling two of them. And that just goes to show you all the more going back to how obsolete I've become. Anything that involves your mind, I think it's that what's going on here is that our minds are being considered to be obsolete. Anyway, which brings me around to, so let's see, have I gotten it? Yeah. So no, I haven't made my point yet. So Amanda Congdon, who I admire tremendously, and I think they're on the right track, and I almost bought the $40,000 ad myself. Really, because I think it's a good deal, and that they're on a slope, and their first instance of advertising or commercial information providing, which is the way I think of it, is going to be, well, whatever they want it to be, because it's going to get so much attention, those first ads, that the people who buy the ads are going to get their money's worth no matter what happens. The awareness of their product or service or their brand or whatever is just going to go way up. And it's only going to be good because there is so much goodwill for Rocket Boom. It's going to transfer that we all appreciate the fact that they make it possible for them to continue to make Rocket Boom, because we love Rocket Boom, and therefore we appreciate anybody who helps make more Rocket Boom possible. If some advertiser wanted to step up and fund another season of The West Wing, they'd buy a ton of goodwill from some smart people, because I think it's smart people that like The West Wing, And I'll bet a lot of them vote, too. Just FYI. It might not be a bad deal to pony up whatever it costs. $50 million to fund another season of The West Wing. So we find out what happens when Jimmy Smits actually takes the oath of office and totally screws everything up, which we're sure he's going to do, right? Well, first, we're never going to find out, right? Well, so maybe there's an opportunity. Hint, hint. How about it? $50 million? That's not very much money. Unfortunately, it's a little bit more than I can afford. But, yeah, so those first things are going to work. But well, what happens later is going to get interesting. And their minds are going to be at work over there at Rocket Boom. And they're going to be thinking, crunching ideas and thinking and thinking. And, well, will this work? Will that work? And so forth. And I think what they're going to end up with, I think they're going to end up at the same place that a bunch of other people are ending up right now. Some people I like, some people I don't like, some people have treated me well, some people have treated me like absolute crap, but they're still smart, and they're still figuring it out, that what we're creating here is a new channel for information, for commercial information, and that mastering that is going to not be just like mastering radio and television. That's all. So if you don't agree with what with that last statement, then we're not in agreement. But I don't think that any of those people on that show think that we're just recreating radio and television here. If they do, well, we disagree. So anyway, so now that that's settled, and we're now, 26 minutes into this, I'm going to try to zip through a few things here as quickly as I possibly can. Last night I wrote a piece. I went to see John Edwards. I went to a roundtable discussion with a bunch of people from the blogosphere, mostly. There were some people who weren't bloggers, who were technologists or entrepreneurs or what have you. And there were a few academics there as well, and then just bloggers like most, like myself, and Mike Arrington was there. We had a very interesting discussion, I thought, and a good discussion. I always walk out of a room with a billion ideas, and yesterday was no exception to that. I just have a lot of ideas. I wrote one of them up last night, and it was a rehash. I didn't say this, but I'm going to say it now. I said basically if I were a candidate for president or involved with a candidate for president in 2008 election, one of the things that I would do would be to try to solve this problem that there is no good source of political news of a lot of different perspectives and high quality political news. I want a lot of political news. I want it from a lot of points of view. I don't want to just hear about the news from the point of view of one political I don't want to hear just from one political point of view. I am not so, what's the right word? I just want a lot of points of view. I'll give you the prototype. When I spent a week or so hanging out at the Dean for America headquarters in Burlington, Vermont, right at the pretty much the end of the campaign in January of 2004. This was in the week leading up to the Iowa caucus, which is sort of when everything sort of went to hell for Dean. I went there with kind of a blank slate, not knowing what I wanted to do, but what I wanted to do is I wanted to see if what of our technology from the blogging world could fit in to what they're doing at Dean and do it quickly and do something, of course, that they hadn't already done because they were using blogs at Dean for America. So what I noticed was, and they had a large staff, probably, I don't know, maybe 200 people working out of this really cramped office space in an office building in Burlington. And what I noticed is that they passed around these huge books with clippings on a daily basis, the candidate was, the election, actually, was getting a huge amount of press. And what they did was, everybody who was in an intellectual role in the campaign, in other words, not just an administrative role, you know, a strategist or somebody who was doing a lot of planning or whatever, they got a copy of this book every day. A new book was produced that had copies, Xerox copies, of all the press that had appeared in the last day about the campaign. And, of course, there was a lot of it. Of course, it makes sense, right? I mean, a campaign has to be just constantly focused on what's being said, because the whole idea is you want to drive that process and you want to make sure that it's all coming out. And, you know, when I say of course, maybe it isn't just of course, because I'm not sure how much that press really drives the voters, because Dean was getting great press. Of course, he didn't win in Iowa. So, but one thing's for sure, they're consuming a lot of it and they want that information. So I said, okay, now I know what to do. So I put together this thing called Channel Dean. And Channel Dean was was basically a web-based aggregator that subscribed to a whole bunch of feeds that basically recreated in real time. So it wasn't like once a day, it was always being updated, a real-time version of that book on a website. So that if you want to find out what new articles had appeared, you just go to that website and there they are in reverse chronological order. So you could go back every 10 or 15 minutes and you would find something new. This machine was constantly reading the RSS feeds. And of course the quality of the application was proportional to related to the quality of the feeds. And by that point in time, by 2004, there was already a pretty good base of RSS feeds. Of course, it's only gotten better since then. So, Doc Searles, who read my article, How to Make Money on the Internet, How to Become President on the Internet, asked, well, what would be different about the idea I'm proposing? Well, different from, you know, Huffington or any number of other sites that are proposing to do what I propose to do. And the difference is that we really wouldn't have any editorial content at all. What we would be doing would be aggregating. They would all be in the selection of the sources. And the output would be a website, it would be an RSS feed, and it would be a reading list, an OPML reading list. And what the candidate would do would be to pump it, to promote it, to get ideas for it, to get funding for it, to just drive awareness of this, that the message is, before we even start the campaign, let's upgrade the political process for those who want to participate. We're not going to have an argument about whether everybody wants to participate, okay? Because, okay, that's not important. We know that there are some people who want to participate. If nobody else, the people on our own campaign need this kind of information. But we're going to do something fundamentally different than what other campaigns that came before us do, which is we're not just going to produce this book for our own staff, right? We're going to produce it for the world, for not just even for American citizens, not even just for voters. We're going to produce it for everybody. If you've got an internet connection, you can go down to your public library. If you live in Europe or Asia or Africa or Antarctica or Australia, New Zealand, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, you name it, wherever you are, whether you're Republican or Democratic or independent, it doesn't matter. What we're going to do is we're going to provide information that arms the electorate so that they can make better decisions, so that win or lose, the system's going to be better because of our candidacy. I think that's an incredibly compelling argument to make for why a candidate should be a candidate. In other words, I know that I might not win. I mean, certainly Howard Dean knew that he might not win. Howard Dean went into the whole process knowing for sure that he wasn't going to win, and he was blown away, I think, when he found out that he had a chance of winning. So there must have been some other reason he was doing it, but he never explained that. Well, I think that a candidate should start out by saying that. Because, look, it's a long shot, right? I have a dream. I want to lead our country because I think I've got an idea of where we should be going. And one of the places I want to go is I want a more informed electorate, because if I get elected president, I want to work with an electorate that understands that we've got some serious challenges in front of us. And I want them to be, I want us to make much better decisions in the United States. And it's a win, even if I don't win the election, whoever does become president is going to have that kind of electorate. And if he's, God forbid, the kind of person who wants to work with an electorate that is dumb and ignorant, well, we're going to deprive him of that because we care about our country and because we want our country to be strong. And we don't think that our country can be strong with an electorate that is uninformed. And it's all around goodness because that's what the internet does. I mean, you know, all these guys want to know, how can I use the internet? How can the internet be? Because they got the idea that the internet is a very powerful tool. And it's not even hard to get people to believe that we're in the same kind of period right now that they were before the 1960 election, when Kennedy was the first candidate to really make effective use of television, and that changed everything really radically in the process. Well, whoever is a good internet candidate, it's argued, is going to do very well. This is what people believe. And I believe this is how you do it. So that's the idea for Edwards. It's an adaptation or the completion of the idea that we never really did. I mean, we launched the technology, but by the time we actually had it running, the Dean campaign was kaput. So it didn't much matter. Had they gone forward, had they made it through Iowa, even without the scream speech, you know, if the candidacy had not been deleted, things would have gone quite a bit differently, I think, because of this. But, you know, as things often happen, it didn't happen, so we're going to look at this again. Now, I had other ideas too, but this is the one I want to talk about first. So, anyway, so let's see. We're about 37 minutes into it, and I think that it's a really good time now to just sort of fade out with, let's do another, how about this Huey Lewis and the new song? Let me first turn it up. Let's see, I don't even know. Okay, here we go. Okay, we'll see y'all next time. Bye. You can't even hear it. Oh, I know why.